Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody.
So good to have you with us.
I just realized I've got to mute something here.
I apologize. We got that darn echo thing going. There we go. Got rid of that. I had two mics going. I got a backup mic, and somehow when we went live, that went on. Appreciate you being with us. And I am excited about today's broadcast. It is Monday, June 10th, 2013, and we have got a jam-packed program for you with some great information and an exciting guest. We've got Greg Frost, who's a legend in our industry, the first to close over $1 billion of loans in the industry. Most of you know, if I mention the name Greg Frost, almost all of you know who it is and are well acquainted with him. But Greg will be sharing some of his trade secrets and tactics with us that have served him well for more than 40 years in the mortgage industry. It's great to have you, our listening audience, with us, as we have multiple tens of thousands of mortgage professionals listening each and every week for the update on what's going on in the markets and what's going on in the news. We appreciate you making this a part of your broadcast, a part of your method by which you get your information. We've got a special thank you that goes out to our sponsors, United Guarantee. United Guarantee is a private mortgage insurance company most of you, again, also know about. I can't encourage you to go to their website. Click on our link on our website and go to their link. It's in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage. It'll go thread right out to their website, and there's so much, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later, some of the products and services they're offering. A la mode, thank you so much for also being a proud sponsor. Without further ado, let's get into what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr, good to have you with us.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here.
Yeah, this morning, Dave.
What's going on today?
Well, MBS prices
up, down, around?
Well, they've been both. They've been both, just like most day. Yeah, right now, they're down about 530 sections. The three is, we kind of have to start focusing more on the 3.5, I believe. They're down 230 seconds, so... And it's been a bit of a volatile morning without much information to push it one way or the other. We started the morning falling down about 530 seconds, fully recovered that, fell again, fully recovered that. Now we're back down to basically the lows of the day. And again, nothing really, no real news to move the market. Dow's about break even. It's just been a little bit negative. So just a volatile morning for a quiet day in the news.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, last week we saw another drop in MBS prices and a rise in mortgage rates. Kind of give us a rundown of last week.
Well, you know, last week was all about the jobs report that came out on Friday, but it began on Wednesday. You know, as the ADP report came out a little weaker than expected, and then on Thursday the jobless claims were a little worse than expected. The consensus that was announced earlier in the week of 160,000 jobs or so, people were beginning to believe that that was a little bit too aggressive, a little bit too bullish, and if a new consensus had been taken, chances are it would have been a good bit lower. But then when the jobs report actually was announced at 175,000, it was considered better than expected. And, you know, for stocks, it was kind of the perfect environment. It was better than expected and therefore creating more people with jobs and potentially, you know, more people with money in their pocket, but not so good that is going to cause the Fed to rush to begin the taper of their bond purchase program. But then for mortgage rates and MBS prices, I believe that you know, the long-term interest rates are going to be higher, and that's just a given, and that's already happened, as we've seen. And so this news, with a little better than expected economic news, was back to the old traditional thing, it's just inflationary, and better economic news is bad for mortgage rates. So during the week, we had seen a nice improvement in prices after the Wednesday and Thursday reports, but that was all turned around. And ended the week down about 10/32nds, I believe, maybe a little bit more than that on the Fannie Mae 30-year three. But the stock market improved. That's good on that side too.
Yeah, good on that side. What do we look forward to on this week? Not as busy as last week, it does, Lisa.
No. Like there's it. Just last week had all the labor. That last week was really an interesting week, given all the anticipation for the report. Yeah,
correct.
This week we have the retail sales comes out on Thursday. That can be a big report, and
PPI
comes out on Friday. Might watch the Treasury auctions that start on Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday are the 10 and the 30-year, which may have a more influence on the MBS prices. But hopefully we'll get back to a little less of this wild and crazy price movement.
Yeah, it has been a bit wild, and we can anticipate, which kind of signals a little bit, maybe everyone's nervous about we're at the bottom and we're going to see things going up. And, folks, if you do not have a service like MBS Quote Line that gets it to you to the point, not all the analysis, not all the commentary, gets right to the point, you've got to get this service, MBS Quote Line. Joe Farr, thank you so much
for being
here. Appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us each and every week. Again, stay tuned. We've got Greg Frost, the legend, the icon, who's closed over $1 billion later in the broadcast. So excited to have him on. I spent some time with him this last week. It was so much fun at the Mastermind 2013 event. What a deal. Alice Alvey is out and traveling on the road, and just before the broadcast, she kindly put together a quick update and pre-recorded it, and we're going to play that now. Alice, we just have a wonderful day wherever you're at traveling. Here's Alice's report.
Good morning, everyone. This is Alice Alvey. I am so sorry I can't be there live with you today, but I did want to take a few minutes to give you my update for today. I'm telling you, it's strange how some things you think in a regulation have been out there forever, and all of a sudden one day people go, whoa, how come an auditor's paying attention to this now? I had one of my customers call me because they had a bank examiner walk in, and she said that one of the first things they looked for was a disclosure for single premium mortgage insurance. How many of you have forgotten that? I even had a lawyer call me up and say, it doesn't say anything in the statute that we have to have a single premium disclosure. But if you think about it, folks, it falls under the same criteria as what in the regulation is talked about as lender paid MI, right? In the concept of lender paid MI, the interest rate has been increased, but also it's that the customer doesn't get any of it back, right? There isn't a refund provision when the loan hits a 78 LTV. And that's the component the regulators are looking for, is that as part of application, if you quote single premium mortgage insurance, you need to be giving the customer a disclosure that talks to them about the fact that this is non-refundable and it's not ever coming back, right? It's in your loan amount. And, you know, that obviously there's a mix in single premium. In the case I'm talking about right now, this is single premium that the borrower is actually going to pay either in an upfront lump sum or potentially if it gets rolled into the loan amount. So you want to take that lender-paid mortgage insurance disclosure that is part of the regulation. There's a sample in there. If you can't find it, send me an email. I'm happy to send you the sample. And then basically when you read it, you're replacing where it says lender-paid on MI, and you're rephrasing that and using borrower-paid single premium. And when you look at the way the sentence structure is, I think if you know mortgage banking, you'll know how that disclosure has to be slightly modified. So we're telling the customer, hey, you know, you're going to pay this out of pocket, or perhaps it's rolled in the loan amount, but in either case, you're not getting any of it dropping or disappearing as a part of the fact that the loan may reach a 78% loan to value. Now, in some cases, I'm not sure if you'll have a refundable provision in that. Again, just make sure the wording of that disclosure matches the type of the premium, mortgage insurance premium, that your borrower is going to pay on a conventional loan. So you can send me an email. It's alice.alvey@indecom.net. Don't forget our new name, Indecom Mortgage U. Also, another heads up for everybody. Again, June 1st hit, so now we have these FHA loans that have APRs that are triggering a high-priced mortgage loan, because now that the FHA annual MIP is not going away, it's pushing up those APRs. So make sure you've seen Carol Galante's letter that explains how to treat these, that, you know, identifying the difference between FHA policy and what is HPML. They keep reassuring us that we're going to get some clarification under the QM rule to help us still be able to have these FHA loans classified as a QM and not end up in the yellow zone, as I keep calling it, you know, that you could have an FHA that triggers HPML, which therefore creates this rebuttable presumption of compliance. We don't want to be in that bucket with our FHAs, right? We want all of our FHAs safely in the green zone, clearly a QM safe harbor, and it does sound like from Carol Galante's letter that FHA is working on that with the regulators, even though we now, with this mortgage insurance premium change, may have APRs that exceed the threshold of an HPML. So stay tuned for that. We're definitely watching for that because I think that's a big deal. I know you've got investors out there right now who are setting policies on this. There'll be interim policies, and everybody's just guessing until we actually get the final QM clarification on this piece. So those are my two big hot buttons as of today. As a side note, next week or in the coming weeks, we're going to spend time sharing with you some of the nooks and crannies that we find out in the CFPB, TILA, and ECOA updates that they've put in their new examination manuals. So as each of these examination manuals come out, rest assured, we're checking them for you, letting you know if there's any tips and secrets you need to know that are coming out in those documents. Take care, everyone, and have a really great day. Show Dave, back to you.
Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it so much. You know, the fact that she takes time when she's traveling as much as she is right now is really appreciated. She takes time out to do that. Remember, the big announcement last week was Indecom acquired Mortgage U, and Alice is now part of the Indecom companies, and it's a lot to learn about there. A lot of exciting stuff developing across the industry. Mergers and acquisitions happening everywhere, and Alice got caught up in it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief message. And remember, Greg Frost a little bit later in the broadcast, coming up shortly. Thank you. The Profit Doctor is next. Don't want to miss the Profit Doctor. Stay tuned.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource, used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
And now's the Profit Doctor segment. You know, why are we in business, everybody? Are we in here to have fun? Of course we're here to have fun. Hopefully you're having fun. If you're not, we need to talk to you. So anyway, you need to talk to Greg Frost. He's going to tell you how to have fun and do well a little bit later on that. But the Profit Doctor is going to tell you how to make money and have fun.
Hey, Dave.
And good to have you with us, Prophet Doctor. You know, we got a lot of loan originators on the broadcast today because, of course, we got the infamous icon, Greg Frost, on here just right after your segment. And we're going to be we're talking about profitability and how to do this. And a lot of people are doing this, and they're not having fun, nor are they making money. Andy, what some words of wisdom does the Prophet Doctor have for those that are struggling, at least with the money-making part of it?
Well, you obviously got to have fun, and you got to make money while you're doing it. If you don't make money, if you don't profit from the activity that you're engaged in, you won't be able to do it very long because, you know, like you'll go out of business. That's what happens when you don't have enough money. So I think it's really essential to, you know, having someone like Greg, I think a billion-dollar originator is very, very impressive. You know, that wasn't, that's a lot of loans. And so the companies that he worked for obviously made money on the volume that he produced. And, you know, what's interesting is that when you look at a company, you look at a branch, you look at an originator, you look at your products, and you think about, it's great to have volume because obviously without volume you don't have profit. But
right.
How much profit do you have? And how do you know? And how do you measure it? And how do you watch it? And how to make sure you know? So you've got to go back to every single loan, and you got to look at every single loan and take all the cost and all the revenue and code it by branch and code it by originator and code it by product. So that way, if you start with every single loan and build up the details from there, then you could know what your profitability is by originator. And I'm sure there's companies all around the country that would love to have Greg join their team. And rightly so, there's a lot of volume there. Well, what happens if there's another guy that's maybe not quite the volume that Greg is, but he's still doing really well? How do you know how much you want to cut the prices or do adjustments or structure your compensation so that you still make money as a company? Because just having volume alone won't make you stay in business. You can have the profit too. So it's important to watch.
So
it's important to pay attention. And it's a lot of detail, and that's the part that people mess up on, is that you've got to track every single fee, every single cost associated with every single loan, and allocate it back out so you track it by product, by branch, by originator, and that way you can know what your profitability is.
Yeah, Andy, and so many people miss that. It's, you know, knowing how profitable, not each originator, but on each loan, how much money did you make? And it's important to know that as a company, as a business owner. It's important to know that as an individual that is doing each loan. And I tell you, loan-level P&Ls, profit and losses on any of your loan, what's your profit, what's your loss, what's your expenses, you should have that. And Andy, how many, we've talked to originators and companies all the time, the number of people that are tracking per loan profitability net, it's just not as many. That it's surprising.
It is. It is. It's sad, actually. It's an opportunity for us in our business to fix it, but it's unfortunate because people are driving in the dark with their headlights off, and they don't realize that they're heading toward the cliff because they aren't measuring the information they're supposed to measure. If you start with loan-level profitability, then you can build out originator profitability, product profitability, branch profitability, because all those come from capturing loan-level total revenue, total cost allocation, profitability per loan. And if you do that, then you're going to be doing great. You can know exactly what you need to know to be able to stay in business, because the thing you want to do is have tons of volume, no cash to pay for salaries on payroll, and also no profits to keep the lights on long term. It's more than just volume. You got to have volume, but it's more than just volume. It's the plus.
Andy,
volume
ever,
plus.
Yeah, it's volume plus, and thank God for top producers can help us do that, and then thank God for the Prophet Doctor know how to drive the profitability to the bottom line.
I got a question for Andy.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry, I thought you were about to move on.
No.
Andy, what's your view on measuring those costs by including things that get allocated to it, like the HR department or the accounting department or the CEO's salary and things like that?
That's a great question, Joe. I like to start with all the direct costs first, the ones that are easier to identify, like commission and all the other origination costs. Come up with a gross profit, and then below the line, come up with a allocation of all the other indirect costs. Now, this is kind of very basic cost accounting. You know, Joe and I are both CPAs, so this is just one of the basic
the
things
secret
you do
handshake.
Is you have cost accounting. Well, so you take your direct costs and come up with a profit, and then you also take some degree of indirect cost allocation based on probably volume and allocate those dollars back out. And that way you can really understand comprehensively what your profit per loan is.
You know, like the question I wonder about, you know, the most demoralizing thing is when a company burdens the originators with too much of the cost. There's a fine line there, and Andy has that, folks. And if you want to know where that fine line is, how to set up the profitability, how to do a profit analysis, who's the guy you call? When you're sick, you call your family doctor, your family physician, and if you're sick and you're not sure about your bottom line, wondering about it, you want to improve it, call the profit doctor. He will help you. He fix what's ailing your bottom line. Thank you so much, Andy. I know how busy you are and what work, how much work you're doing. So on all our so many clients that are calling you for just that. So appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dave. Glad to be here.
Remember, everybody, we got Greg Frost right after the ad break coming up, and we've got just a wonderful 30 minutes of drilling in and finding out what made this guy so successful. What were the keys? Then in a market such as Albuquerque, with an average loan amount of $100,000, it's not making it worse than his, $100,000, how did he do this? $1 billion? That's a lot of loans. Amazing. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Appreciate you being with us each and every week, and we are so fortunate to have as our special guest Greg Frost. I've got this long bio that I could write up, but you know what? The reality is for many of you listening, he doesn't need much of an introduction. He's so well known out there, and we're excited to have him here. He has been ranked in the top 20 originators in America for the past 2 decades. That's over 20 years. Rated in the top 20 originators. He is a number one. He is number one in a notable first. And I mean, he's got notable number firsts. And the first is to be consistently originating multi-million dollars of loans each month. 1999, the Mortgage Originator magazine acknowledged Greg as the industry's first billion-dollar originator, and that's an amazing feat when you consider the fact that it was done in Albuquerque in a city of less than 500,000 people. So those of you who think you have to be in the big, big metroplexes to accomplish this, this was done in a community of less than 500,000 people with an average loan amount during that period as way under $100,000. Folks, that's a lot of loans. Greg has become one of the top LO productivity trainers in the United States. In fact, that's where I met him, is that at the Mastermind 2013 conference in Las Vegas. Now, I watched as celebrated Rick Ruby of the Core Training introduced Greg as to the crowd of over 1,900 LOs as the icon of the mortgage industry, and I absolutely stood up and cheered. I had the privilege of sitting down next to him, and I looked over him, and I had met Greg years ago, ahead and talked to him, and looked over, and Don Hennick, who I was with, said, "Dave, do you know you're sitting next to a legend?" And I go, "Greg, how are you? It was great to pick up." And it's one of those conversations, you know what you think, is there accidents, the things that are random? I don't think so. Greg and I struck up a conversation, renewed a friendship. And I tell you, there's many things I can get excited about an individual that's been successful, but it really comes down to his values. When we were in waiting in line, folks, for the restaurant, there were several people gathered around, and there was no formal line structure. He was so respectful of those standing around. So now, are you here first? Would you like to go first? So it came to that character. He has got all the celebrated success, but he cared about the people around him to make sure that that he wasn't perceived as buddy in the line. That impressed me. And the way he treated the waiter. It was just one of those things that are going, it's a pleasure to be around successful people who care about people, and that's our guest. Greg Frost, you are dialed in from someplace out on the East Coast in Atlantic City at the Tropicana Hotel, if I recall correctly, and talked to your son, and you're about ready to start training 1,000 LOs tomorrow at the Ultimate Mortgage Expo. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. I'm here looking out at the gray day. I got a room with a view of the ocean, but it's raining.
a room with a view, but it's raining. Well,
I haven't seen the ocean yet, but I'm hopeful.
Greg, it is just such an honor to have met you and got to reconnect with you there at the conference. And I want to give our listeners that do not know you, again, you're so well known, but I want to get our listeners a chance to get to know you. And I'm going to start with the most obvious question. What prompted you to get in mortgage lending in the first place, Greg?
Well, I was in college at the University of New Mexico, and I got a tryout. I played football in college. I got a tryout with the Denver Broncos. So I snuck out of town and went up there to try out, and Lou Saban was the head coach. And after reviewing my films, he took me into the coach's office, and he said, "Son, I've looked at your films, and I think that someday you're going to be a tremendous mortgage banker." And so I came back to Albuquerque, and I went to work for a savings and loan. And that's how I learned. Back in those days, that was 1972. If you wanted to learn mortgage lending, you either went to work for a bank that had a mortgage company or savings and loan. I went to work for a savings and loan. I was the very first management trainee at the small savings and loan in Albuquerque. And I learned it from A to Z, in that savings and loan environment.
Well, Greg, this is Andy. It's great to have you on the show. And what's funny about that is both Dave and I both started with savings and loans in the 70s. So it's a great training ground. But speaking of training, back in those days, the reality of training isn't like it is today, where you just dial onto an online website. It was much more challenging. So how did you get your training to be as successful as you are?
Well, the first thing that the president of the savings and loan did when I went to work there is he gave me the responsibility for collecting the delinquent real estate loans. And he says, "I want you to work with some bad loans before I have you make your loans." And so I had to tear these loan files apart, and I had to figure out where they failed. I had to audit them. I had to find out. I had to audit the appraisals. I had to audit the credit reports. I had to going to see what had happened since the loan was closed that affected the customer's inability to pay, and I learned it that way. And then he just handed me the FHA 4155 and the underwriting guidelines. He said, "Read them," and I said, "Okay," and I read them. And then when he thought I was ready to sit down and interview somebody, he had me take a loan application for the toughest realtor in Albuquerque, one of his clients, a fellow by the name of Doyle Pargin. And Doyle was a no-nonsense guy. And back then, the realtors would come in and sit right there in the loan application and listen to everything, And heck, Doyle knew more about how to fill out that application than I did. And so I worked through it, and he helped me through it and poked me through it. And eventually, there are underwriting guidelines, and then there's realities of life. And I was early in my 20s, and I learned a lot about people, learned a lot about putting loans together. At that time, the savings and loan took the loans they made and set them on the shelf in the vault. So
remember those days?
I'll tell you when I really learned about how to make a loan is when we tried to sell our first package of loans to Fannie Mae. And I was there working on that first package of loans to Fannie Mae, and we shipped off the loans. We were all excited, waiting for that check. And the boss said, "Hey, call Fannie, where I get that check?" And I called them, and they said, "Well, actually, we're sending back that box of loans. You got some more stuff we need." Oh, my goodness gracious, the loans came back. And we thought, back in those days, you loaned money every Friday based on how much you had on deposit, So we had to hurry up and fix them. We got them back, and I had to hand carry those loans back to Fannie Mae and give them to the gal and say, "Okay, I'm here with these loans," because we needed that $1 million. It was $1 million in sales. And he said, "Well, we'll look at them. We'll get back to you Tuesday or Wednesday." "No, you don't understand. I got to sit here until I go home with a check."
Greg, was your commission riding on it?
There was no commission back then. I was working for $550 a month.
Oh, so it wasn't a matter of you know, starting out with no income until you close the loan.
No, it was a matter of keeping my job, because if I didn't come back with a check from Fannie Mae,
well, there's no question.
That's where I got my first start.
That's fascinating.
Well, Andy, you started out in the bank, so you know a little bit about that and how we used to sell our loans in the secondary market. Things have certainly changed since those early 70s when we started all of this.
No, exactly. All the portfolio analysis we used to have to do, and because we kept every loan we made and analyzed it, and we lent money on 30-year fixed rate and used short-term liabilities to fund it, and thought that was a smart thing to do. Until, of course, intermediation and Paul Volcker, we can thank Paul Volcker for destroying many of the savings and loans, but we won't get into that right now.
We won't go.
I'm actually really interested in hearing what Greg thinks. So, Greg, let's see. You're a savings loan. A lot of us can relate to those days, and you're there, and, you know, what's your first week? You're getting trained. You're getting out there. What did you do your first week on the job?
Well, I'm going to take you forward a few years to answer that question so that I can be substantive of the people that are listening in. I worked for that savings and loan for 5 years, then I took a job. I talked myself into a job as president and CEO of a small savings loan in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I ran that thing, and we ended up selling it in 1984. So I'm going to take you to 1985 when I came back to the Albuquerque market as a producing branch manager, actually division president, they called me. It was a big title, but what I was doing was originating loans. I came back with Foster Mortgage in 1985, and so I'm reentering the Albuquerque market, and I've been gone up in Santa Fe, New Mexico for 7-8 years. And I really had lost touch with who was doing what and where things were going. My very first week on the job, what I did was I went down and joined the Albuquerque Board of Realtors as an associate member. I got their membership list. I sat down with the membership list, and I yellow marked everybody that I knew, everybody that I thought I knew, everybody that had a kid in youth football or had a Boy Scout that I was involved in, who had church people, Civitan Club people, Rotary Club people, anybody there in that real estate list that I thought I had know that I knew, and then I marked down who I needed to talk to, and then the first thing I did was call them up and invited them to breakfast and lunch. So I looked at these real estate agents that were members of the Board of Realtors, any close or semi-close connection or at all, and I sat down with them. I told them I was back in Albuquerque, that I was a decision maker, even though I wasn't. I had an underwriter in Colorado Springs. I said, I'm your decision maker. I'm the guy. The buck stops with me. I'll get your loans approved and closed on time. And I started just that way. At that time, nobody took realtors to breakfast. Nobody took realtors to lunch. I was the first one to do it, and sat down over a meal, gained their confidence, and got a tryout from them. And took the leads that they gave me, turned them into closed loans, and the rest is history. I closed zero loans my first month, three loans my second month, and I think 11 loans my third month, and just was on from there and never looked back.
So, Greg, it sounds the first thing you do is get your name out and your contacts out. What comes immediately thereafter? You said you didn't close many loans even into 3 months and maybe even into 4 months, but after you start identifying those connections, how do you go about making those begin to pay for you?
Well, I just kept on them. I kept calling them, and I kept on them, and I feel, and I've always felt that if you sit down with somebody and have an hour of unobstructed time with them, which you can have over breakfast or lunch, but you can get to know them, you can see if you kind of like one another, you can see if you have things in common, and when somebody starts feeling good about you or commonality about you, it's easier for them to refer you a transaction, and that's how I treated those realtors, and that's what happened. They committed. And all I ever asked him for was one loan. I said, look, I don't expect you to change what you're doing. I'm new back here. I haven't been in this market for a while. I don't expect you to be successful. You're doing things successfully. I don't expect you to change what you're doing. How about this? How about committing to refer me one transaction a month for the next 3 months and see how we do? And just that amount. Well, most realtors don't realize it, but that's all their production. If you take a look at the National Association of Realtors statistic, you'll see that there's very few realtors that do more than 20 loans a month. Half of them are listing sold, half of them are buyers, so the buyers are who I'm interested in. So most realtors don't have that many loans to refer. So I'm sitting there asking somebody for one loan a month. They're probably going to do 12 or 13 in the whole year. That one loan a month is all their business. They don't realize they're committing to that. And because of that, they readily commit to it. And so that's the one loan that I have to refer back to each time I talk with them in the future. I'm constantly referring back to that one loan they promised to refer me. If I can get them to do that for 3 months, we all know that breaking a habit, making a habit is 90 days. If I can get them to refer me that one loan per month, which very possibly will represent all of their business for that month, 3 months in a row, they've broken the habit of doing business with their former mortgage resource, and they've gained the habit of doing business with me. That's how I approached it, and that's how it worked.
Wow, Greg, well, that sounds like you're associating commitment with results and reminding them of your commitment and the result were the same. And in the script here, and we're on a national broadcast here, so our producer kind of sends us notes to say, and so I've got a note here, and they're suggesting that I ask you about how Vince Lombardi affected your career and being a collegiate-level football player and almost a pro football player. I can understand why someone like Vince Lombardi would be significant, but fill us in a little bit on how Vince Lombardi affected your career.
One of Vince's, I've read all the books about him and by him, et cetera. One of his quotes was especially touching to me. He said, "We need to constantly seek perfection, understanding full well that we'll never achieve it, but also understanding that along the way we'll achieve excellence." So excellence is in all of our grasps. It comes as a byproduct of us seeking perfection. So what I tried to do is invest in myself on a regular basis and attend and participate in self-improvement opportunities. Now, there weren't a lot of them in Albuquerque, especially in the 80s and 90s, because too small of a market, none of the self-improvement folks, came to Albuquerque. Zig Ziglar didn't come to Albuquerque. Several, Floyd Wickman didn't come to Albuquerque. Tommy Hopkins didn't come to Albuquerque. You had to go places to see these guys and gals. So I made a commitment to myself every 90 to 120 days. I got on an airplane. I went to Phoenix or Denver or Dallas or L.A. I stayed in a hotel room. I went to their conference, went to their presentations, bought their tapes back then, CDs now, but tapes back then, brought them home and studied them and attempted to improve myself. Back then, if you went to one seminar, the members of the National Speakers Association would share their attendance list. So you'd get on other people's mailing list. So I was constantly getting information about self-improvement seminars that I could go to because I kept getting on other lists. So I'd go off and I'd learn more. I'd come back. I'd try to mortgageize a couple of the ideas. And as a result of that, I started implementing new strategies in the marketplace that I gleaned from this information, and they were successful. And so I appeared to be this very smart guy, but really what I was doing was swiping and adapting the ideas of self-improvement training.
I think that's okay. So key, and that's what this conference was about that we attended, where we reconnected, was the mastermind. And 2,550 individuals invested, $200+ plus the airfare plus hotel, at least that, and sometimes in many cases much more than that, to be there to listen to all these speakers. And I think there's you really bring up a great point. If you're investing in anything,
the number one place you should invest is investing in yourself. It's interesting, Greg, that a lot of people talk about that and get motivated about it, but you actually went out. You flew out to see these speakers. You made that commitment. You know, what other things did you do? Do you read a lot? I mean, how much do you read? Who do you read? I mean, our listeners want to know, come on, who inspired you? Where did you get all this, these tricks that you, not tips, not tricks, but it's these tools is probably the best way to reference it.
Well, start with Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich.
Oh, yeah. Think and Grow Rich. Great book. Awesome book.
That's like the fundamental book of self-improvement. And then, you know, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale after him. And then, you know, Tony Robbins. You know, we saw Tony Robbins last week.
And that's amazing.
He's a dynamic speaker. If you listen to Tony, you hear a lot of the basic principles that you find in Think and Grow Rich. In fact,
right.
I maintain that most of the self-improvement folks these days are, they're grounded by that book. That's their main book.
It anchors them.
Earl Nightingale and Zig Ziglar and all of those folks, you know, all started with Think and Grow Rich. And I read, I think reading in general, it's not so much who I read, but reading in general is a lost art. And I think it's something that everybody needs to continue, regardless of how busy they are. You want to put good stuff into your brain. You put good stuff in, good stuff comes out. And there's all kinds of good stuff. There's all kinds of self-improvement stuff. And what I suggest to people is they try to read 30 minutes a day. You know, and my whole world revolves around my calendar. If it doesn't get on my calendar, it doesn't get done. And if you want to read and you want to improve yourself, one of the things you've got to do is you've got to block time for it. You've got to time block for it. So I time block 30 minutes every morning to read something, okay? And a lot of people, when I'm out training, say, well, gosh, I got no time for this. I've got kids. I've got responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I tell them, look, just get up 30 minutes early. Get up 30 minutes early and have that be the first thing that you do. And I think it's important the first thing in the morning when you come out of REM sleep, your mind is as fresh as it's ever going to be for the day. It's fully reconstituted. The blood's cleaned everything. Your lungs are clean. Everything's clean. That's the time you're most receptive to new ideas. So that's the time you want to get up and go read something special. And to those people that say, well, I can never get away from the kids or I can't budget time. Yes, you can. Get up 30 minutes early.
Yeah.
And there's a place in your house that you can go, that you can take a book, you can sit down and you can read one chapter of a book. Most books are 15 to 18 chapters. Most chapters are 18 to 20 pages. You can read a chapter in 30 minutes. And there's a place in your house where you can spend that 30 minutes, you can read that chapter, nobody will bother you, and then when you're finished, you flush, okay? Nobody's going to follow you in there.
That's so true.
And read that chapter.
You are sitting there listening, and you know Rick Ruby is a no-nonsense guy. Just shoots really straight from the platform. One of my favorite quotes from the old conference is, "Hey, folks, you're for those of you, I look out of the audience. Some of you are too fat." He says, "You're fat because you want to be," and he just shoots it so straight. But it's making that commitment. You can change, folks. You can do this if you want to change. You can find the time, or you know what Rick would say. You know, you're not serious about it if you don't want to change it. And some of us are a little heavier, and that's fine because I don't mind being a little extra. You know, at this age, I can carry it. At least I think I can, Greg.
No.
So let's talk a little bit. You know, I think about that conference. I think about that, and I know Andy's got some more questions. Joe and Andy got a couple things. But you're talking about after the seminar. We got a lot of people that were there at that seminar who heard about the broadcast who are regular listeners listening now. We got a lot of your fans listening. Talk about that after the conference process. A lot of people take these energies and the ideas, and they're all inspired and motivated, rah, 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 but they're failing to implement it. Couple quick keys for, quote, unquote, after the seminar.
One of the most important things to do after the seminar, and actually you plan for this before you leave for the seminar, is time block an hour when you come back. The first day you're back, time block an hour during that first day you're back to sit down and reread your notes from the seminar. It's so important when you get back from something like that that you time block and you make certain that you have reflective time to evaluate and determine and to prioritize what it is you're going to do based on what you learned. And so many people go off to seminars, they come back, and the first day back, they're busy. I've talked to three people today, this morning, that asked me to call them next week. I've called them next week, and I was almost ready to call 911 on one guy. He sounded so frazzled, I was sure somebody was holding him at gunpoint. And I said, oh, well, look, this is not a good time to talk, you know. But schedule book time to I call it debrief. Book an hour to debrief. And then when you finish that hour, book another time block, another hour to debrief after the debrief and start gathering up your thoughts for implementation sessions and implementation strategies.
That is so critical. One of the things for me, and it's a tip I hand out to a lot of people, is journal. Take time. There's something about handwriting, not journal on your computer, handwrite. When I slow my brain down enough, it's amazing what percolates out rather than in a frenetic way trying to just download and write down every note and capture everything. You can almost get too intense in that moment. It's something for me that I like to do is just journal. It's amazing how it slows it down. Anyway, Andy, let's looking at our time and what we have to cover. Yeah, let's shoot over to you.
Yeah, well, Greg, again, amazing comments, great points. I do the same thing with scheduling into my calendar. If it isn't on my calendar, I don't do it. And so but I'm a CP, I'm very structured. Well, I'm also a musician, so I kind of have a creative side, but you have to have these disciplines in business to be successful, and part of that, you know, in some executive training at B of A and so forth. But you, in your world in financial management, I'm sure you've identified a bunch of strategies and things that you do to achieve success. And if you've got just one or two of the, you know, quote, can't fail tactics, the things that really make it work that you're willing to share with the audience, there's a lot of people listening and a lot of people are going to download this show. We probably, like on some of the popular shows, we'll hit 15,000 people, and I wouldn't be surprised if we don't exceed that on this show. So what is it you can share with us, some of the can't fail tactics that have made you successful?
Well, I'm going to speak to the loan originators right now with some can't fail tactics. Number one, the loan that you have in process is just the beginning of opportunity to close loans. It's one loan, but it's just the beginning of your opportunities. The very first thing that you should do when you're, and I'm going to talk about a purchase money loan here and how to get another loan, okay? First can't fail tactic, pick up the phone and call a listing agent on the transaction, introduce yourself. Let them know that you're working on the file, and let them know you're going to keep them in the loop, and let them know how the progress of the loan processing is going to go. What you'll find is astonishment, because no loan originators are doing this. I shouldn't say no, very few. Astonishment. They'll say, they'll answer you like, well, you know, I'm only the listing agent on this. Or, are you aware I'm the listing agent? Yes, I am. And I'm a professional mortgage originator, and I think it's very important for me to keep you apprised of what's going on, and I plan to do that. Okay? Use the loan in process as a platform to wow and woo that listing agent. And the reason why we want to
wow and woo. That's good.
Wow and woo the listing agent. And you got to understand your statistics. I'm a creature statistic. Okay, in the real estate industry, there's just a handful of realtors that do any volume of business. And if you understand the statistics, you understand why that listing agent is so important. Fully half of every realtor's business is listing sold, and the other half are buyers sold. We tend to focus on the buyers. But we have to understand that on every transaction we're working on right now, there's a listing agent. And that listing agent is participating with us on that half of their business. However, they've got another half of their business, a full half of their business, that where they work with buyers. So we want to take advantage of this loan and process to really wow and woo the listing agent and give them an experience on the transaction better than the experience they're getting from the person they're referring their loans to now. So the first call is an introductory call. The second call is an invitation to breakfast or lunch to sit down and give them a status on the loan in process. So while the loan's in process, you want to personally give them a status, invite them to breakfast or lunch, and give them a status. Now I'm going to tell you something. They will agree to that breakfast or lunch because you've got their paycheck in your pocket. So it's very important for them to make nice with you. And this will give you an opportunity to sit down with them and see if you've got a commonality, share similar core values, and it's somebody that you might like to do business with, and you can start allowing them to find out that you're a pretty nice guy and you might be somebody, a nice gal, you might be somebody that they want to do business with. And you do it all right away, just as soon as you become involved with them on this transaction. And so you take them through the transaction. And then next big idea, weekly status reports. Written weekly status reports go out to the listing agent and the selling agent every Friday afternoon on every loan in process. Whenever I'm in a room and I have a bunch of loan officers that I'm training, there are usually some loan officers who have embraced this strategy, because I've been talking about it for years. They've embraced this strategy, so I'll ask them to raise their hands. They'll raise their hands, they'll stand up, and I'll say, in three words or less, tell me how your realtors feel about your weekly status reports. And they all come back with the same three words. They love them. They love them. I don't have to prompt them. They come back. So I ask everybody in the room every time, okay, so there's four people here that are doing this because they've heard me say it before. How many of you have heard me speak before? And of course, half the room raises their hand because I'm old and I've been doing this forever. and so I look at the rest of them and I say, why haven't you done this? Listen to these four people. Why would you not want to do something that realtors love to endear yourself to them and separate yourself apart from the other people out there trying to gain their business? So weekly status reports are critical. The third thing that I would say, attend your closings on purchase transactions. Attend your closings. Nobody's doing that. I was with the president of the largest title insurance company in the state of New Mexico 2 weeks ago at lunch. And I looked at her and I said, Mona, tell me true. Are there any other mortgage companies in town having their loan officers attend closings? She says, Greg, you're the only one. She's every once in a while.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing, but it's a fact. Listen, you want to be at your closings for two reasons. Number one, whoever's not in the room gets blamed for everything. So you want to be there as a defense mechanism. Okay?
Whoever's not in the room gets blamed for everything. That's a true statement.
You don't want to be the one not in the room. Okay? So it's a defense mechanism to make sure they don't say bad things about it. I mean, you know, an escrow officer or a title clerk or an attorney, whoever does them, an attorney, they can say volumes by just coming in and going, okay, this is a loan from Frost Mortgage, and it just got here about 20 minutes ago, so you're going to have to bear with me for a minute. Okay? Now, that's the nicest bad thing they can say and do. So you want to be there. Okay, number two, it's a great time for you to survey the realtor and survey the customer on how well they liked your service on the transaction. And you give them the surveys and you tell them, okay, I'm about through with my role here. But before you leave, would you give Susie, the escrow person here, fill out the survey and give it to her? And I tell my guys and gals, just say, the old man back at the office wants to know how I did on the transaction. Will you please fill it out and send it back? I'm the old man, see? So they defer to me and they say he wants it, you know. So they fill them out. Well, let me tell you something. You arm yourself with positive surveys when you go out and make sales calls and when you're having breakfast or lunch with these agents that you're wooing, okay? And you say, I just thought I'd bring a couple of these along. Do you know so-and-so over at such-and-such realty? Well, here's what she had to say about my service. Do you know such and such from such and such? Well, here's what he had to say about my service. Just thought I'd leave you with a couple of those. It's a testimonial. And as we know, testimonials are phenomenal.
I want to get over to Joe in just a second. But one of the things that you brought out at the conference was you said that the leading builder brought you out, or one of the major companies selected you to represent a large, I can't remember, it was a subdivision or what it was, but they brought out all these surveys that they had collected that you had sent out. I thought it was a great tactic, and it was one of those things. Joe, I'm sorry about that. I just want to echo that last one. Those surveys are so powerful. Joe, back to you.
I want to ask Greg why he does what he just did, because unless he asks you to block this recording in New Mexico or Albuquerque.
We can't.
Greg, you're giving all your competitors your secrets. Why do you do that?
Well, you know, life's a circle, and so the more you give, the more you get. I subscribe and prescribe to Zig Ziglar's commentary that you can have everything you want in life if you'll just help as many people as you can get what they want in life.
Yeah.
And my life is abundant, and I fear not the person that listens to me and implements my strategy. There's a couple of my competitors in Albuquerque that have and are doing extremely well, and I'm still doing extremely well. So it really, I never worry about that. The fact that you can sit and talk to somebody and help somebody and have them come back to you. I had 42 emails from that conference when I got back to Albuquerque.
Wow.
That was just yesterday, 42 emails. I have more today. I haven't had a chance to read them. Just saying thank you and thanks for this and, gosh, I enjoyed it. Well, you know, somebody like me, guys, I've given away all my ideas every year of my career. And just pass them on. First of all, 95% of people won't use them. You know how that is.
Sad.
So you don't have to worry about that so much. Second of all, I became, as you know, very successful in the mortgage industry. It never stood in the way of me becoming successful. I became one of the top three or four productivity trainers in the mortgage industry. It never stopped me from being that. It created a place for me in the industry that of relevancy that I treasure. And at 64, I don't personally originate anymore, but I treasure maintaining my relevancy in the industry, and so sharing ideas is a way for me to do that.
Well, we have a number of people that appreciate that.
Yes, 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 Joe. So true, so true. I want to get your perspective. I mean, you and I started in 73, you started in 72. And that's what this program is really, you know, looking back to learn the lessons from the history, but then looking forward to where the industry is going. I'd like to get your thoughts on the future for the mortgage industry and specifically for the mortgage originator. What do you forecast to that's going to stay the same and changing?
Well, you know, our industry is under regulatory pressure right now, and that's a knee-jerk reaction to some bad stuff that was allowed to happen, you know, back right after in the early 2000s. And we've got to get through this. The problem with regulation is the regulators seem to think if we can get everybody to fill out one more form and check one more box, you know, this is going to help the consumer. We've all been to closings. We've all been to loan applications. We know the consumer isn't reading any of that stuff. Okay, so
that's right.
We've got to create it, and it's been created, and we're doing it, and they're signing it, and they're not reading it, just like they never read the stuff 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and that's just the way our business is. So loan originators are being inundated with responsibility and threats and documentation requirements and dot and I's, cross and T's. It's crazy. It's a crazy thing, and, you know, God bless them. I'll tell you, I don't know if I'd still be in the business if that's what I had to do every day. It's so hard, and my heart goes out to them. And we are where we are today because there were some people in the industry that did bad thing, and we're paying the price for it. For loan originators, the loan originator that can develop the relationships, develop referral relationships, is going to continue to be valuable to everybody in the industry, and they're going to be able to market their skills, to the best players. The mortgage originator who's relying on their company to provide them with business, with leads, they're in jeopardy.
Yep.
I think we all know that the interest rates of today are unrealistically low and have been made low by government intervention. That government intervention is going to go away, and when it does, interest rates are going to go back to a free market system of setting rates, and when they do, interest rates are going to rise. And I think I can see the last refinance out here. The clouds are beginning to thin here.
The clouds are beginning to part.
I can see that last refinance out here, and the reality is this. Who's going to refinance a 3.5% mortgage?
Yeah,
they're
not going to refinance. People got to get shifted over to the focus. The drums have started, Greg, which means the signals. We are at the end of the broadcast. We're just at the point where we got to wrap this up. Greg Frost, so much. What an honor to have you on the broadcast. What an icon. What an industry leader you've been. and still out there providing wisdom, knowledge, and understanding for our industry. Folks, if you want to learn more, go to www.gregfrost.com and get a hold of him. Greg, what's also your email address? It's good to know that you use email and respond to that. Quickly, what's your email address?
Greg@gregfrost.com.
Folks, we've got Renee Rodriguez. It'll be on the broadcast next week. We're thrilled to have Greg here this week. We're continuing to talk about loan originations. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next week. Tell others about this broadcast. So thrilled. Thanks, Greg, for being with us. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.